Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site you're going to find on the internet. And I'm David Todd from thehammerspeaks.com. Dave, let's get right at it. It's Friday. We've kind of laid it out over the Monday and Wednesday podcast. This game, and I think Ed Bouchette characterized it very well, it's not a must-win game. It's a better-win game. I think that's a perfect description. Let's get right to the injury news because it's changed a little bit since we spoke on Wednesday.
Yeah, we have, Lamar Woodley. We all knew he wasn't going to play. They're going to hold him out till after the bye. He didn't work all this week with that hamstring suffered against the Patriots. He's going to be down this week. Emmanuel Sanders, Tomlin mentioned him in that knee scope on Tuesday, so he's going to be out as well. Arnez Battle, you know, guy who injured his hamstring during this early in the game, evidently last week against the Ravens. He was not able to work all week, so he's going to be down too. Hines Ward, you know, the receivers have really got some issues here. Hines Ward is going to be coming back again from this concussion suffered the other night. He practiced fully all week. He's still listed on the injury report. He is probable. He will play. Jericho Cotchery, who sat out Wednesday with some knee swelling, practiced both Thursday and Friday. He's probable as well. The other guys on the injury report, James Ferrier, James Harrison, Doug Legursky, Troy Polamalu, Stevenson Sylvester, those guys are all probable as well after working fully on Friday. People had concern out there about Troy Polamalu, but as I posted on Twitter last night, that he was never in jeopardy of missing this game. This is a rib injury going back about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Source told me that he just needed a little bit of rest, you know, off the body there for a little bit, so he's going to be good to go. So, you know, with David, with these receivers down, there's a very, very good chance that you could see Tyler Grisham activated from the practice squad tomorrow before they fly out. Of course, we won't know about it till about 2 or 3 o'clock, but by the time they get on the plane to go to Cincinnati tomorrow, Tyler Grisham very well could be on that plane as well.
Interesting idea. Certainly, we you know, as you said, Manny's out. Arnez Battle will be an interesting situation. Tyler Grisham got a little bit of playing time in the last game in the 2009 season. Actually dropped a ball over the middle, made a catch. And he's a guy who you and I talked about in the preseason as, you know, I think very early on, as a guy who might have fit that sixth wide receiver spot. And I wasn't convinced that Arnez Battle was going to bring a ton of value on special teams. I pretty much have been proven wrong on that. Arnez Battle has been very good on special teams and, in fact, is a special teams captain. So no problems with how the decisions were made. Just kind of root for the guy to maybe get another chance. Unfortunately for him, this is going to be his last season in the organization, almost without a doubt, because these young guys have really come on. I assume Hines Ward maybe sticks around for another year, but we can talk about that another day. And, would love to see him get the opportunity. It's been fun to watch guys like McClendon come up and get a chance, and certainly some of the younger guys who have gotten playing time. So this would be another guy to add to the list. What was the situation, Dave? I don't know if we talked about it or it was talked about at all before with the Al Woods pickup from Seattle.
You know, that's I've been asked about that a few times via Twitter as well. And this is a guy that they really liked after, the Saints had dumped him immediately after drafting him, I believe, in the fourth round. The Steelers picked him up. Had him on the practice squad for most of the season. A lot of glowing reports about this kid, and the Buccaneers ended up plucking him off the Steelers practice squad. The Steelers really had no control over that because players on the practice squad are exposed to all the teams as long as they are signed to the team that signs them, a 53-man roster. So he was with them. He was ultimately released. Ended up with Seattle. In fact, if you remember, I think it was Doug Legursky got fined for remember when we played Seattle earlier in the year, Al Woods was the guy that he clipped from behind in that game. So this is a guy that I think that they envision sort of like a Ziggy Hood. You know, there are people saying, is he a nose tackle? Is he a defensive end? I think they're trying to work him in as a left five technique backup defensive end going forward here. They liked him enough that when the Seattle Seahawks waived him the other day, the Steelers plucked him off of waivers and released Morty Ivey to make room on a 53. So I'm not sure about his practice squad eligibility because he's been active on several game day rosters. I need to check his numbers for sure. He might not have any practice squad eligibility left, so he very well could stick around on the Steelers 53-man roster for the rest of the season unless they need that spot.
Yeah, what's interesting about moves like that is, just as you said, the Steelers have had a couple guys like Worthington from Ohio State that you see that get bounced around, that they've at the end of the day, they've opted not to bring him back. This is a guy that they didn't actually draft, that they obviously got a little bit of a look at and think that there's real potential there. So when you see them make moves like that on the fringes of the roster, it's a guy they like. I mean, Morty Ivey was very impressive in the last couple preseason games. Clearly he's a guy that that they like having around. Maybe he has some special teams value. But they, you know, with guys coming back and getting healthy, maybe they need more of that depth on the defensive line than they do at linebacker. Did Morty Ivey get re-signed to the practice squad, or was that something that's more likely to happen on Monday, or is there not a spot there?
There's not a spot open just yet, but you have to remember that going into the weekend, now that practice is over, there's no need to have a signing to the practice squad until next probably Tuesday or Wednesday. So they could very well make a move there and bring back Morty Ivey. I would think he's coming back to the practice squad at some point this season. Yeah, Dave, while we're kind of talking about injuries here, I'm not sure if you saw whether or not Steelers.com has a great interview up, a real candid one with Aaron Smith, where Teresa Varley sat down with him. This was right after the Patriots game, and I believe he says that he was scheduled to have the surgery the following week. So I believe that's done now. He talks about how, his future's still up in the air, talks about the surgery and how they have to go in through the front and the back to put the metal in to fuse those discs together. It really is a great interview. It really doesn't sound like Smith has made his decision on next year, but you can kind of tell in his voice that he definitely sees that the end is near, as they say. So if everybody gets a chance to check that out up on Steelers.com, it's a great about 12-minute interview.
All right, good stuff. Well, Dave, let's get to the Bengals. I know you've had a chance to watch some of their games, see some film on them. One of the things that I don't know if you saw, I think it was an insider thing on ESPN.com. They had a Scouts Inc. earlier in the season ranked, I don't know if they ranked 250 or 2,000 players in the NFL, but they ranked a large number of players. And Matt Williamson went on and re-ranked the top 50 players he's seen in the NFL so far this year. Pretty interesting stuff. The two takeaways, just for those of you who haven't seen it, 5 Steelers in the top 43 players. And if you just think about, if you're ranking 50 players and you got a 32-team NFL, that means, not every team's going to have 2 players on it. And when teams like the Steelers are putting 5 on it, that means a lot of teams are going to have 1 player or no players on that. The 5, as you can imagine, and I think they were in this order, were Ben was at 8. You had Harrison and Polamalu in the high teens, I think. You had Mike Wallace at 26. And you had Lamar Woodley at 43. So those were 5 Steelers on there. But I think what stood out to me is when I think about the Bengals and where their talent is, they've got some young talent. We've talked about Andy Dalton. We've talked about A.J. Green, their first and second round picks in this past year's draft. Everybody knows about Cedric Benson. But the guy Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle, Matt Williamson ranked him as, I think, the 12th or 13th best player in the NFL, and said he might be playing the offensive line position as well as anybody in the game so far this year.
Well, that's to be. He's really right on with kind of that assessment. I think Whitworth has been. He's had his problems this year. He's been up and down. And let's face it, that offensive line of theirs I personally just don't think they've been tested a lot this year. You've got DeAndre Smith. Everybody remembers all that coming back. you know, back when he was drafted and all. And in fact, when we talked to Joe Reedy earlier this week on the Wednesday podcast, he seems to think that he's probably turned a corner because he had battled injuries there for you know, for better part of the first couple seasons there. Whitworth, when you look at him, he ranks out highest from what I've seen, especially on things like Pro Football Focus and all like that. Some of their stuff you have to take with a grain of salt. They do some good work as far as offensive line goes. But yeah, you know, their line, though, to me, still hasn't been tested. A lot of what the Bengals do on offense is a lot of high percentage stuff, a lot of stuff of having the rookie Andy Dalton get the ball out of his hand quick. They like to do play action and kind of roll him out and get him on the move. He throws very good on the move. The key situation with them is going to be their injury report this week, especially with the tight end position with them, because already out for the Bengals now, being on the Friday reports, out is Donald Lee, their backup tight end's out, and you have Jermaine Grisham, the real talented young tight end of theirs. He's doubtful, and it does not look like he's going to play this week, and that's going to be a tremendous blow to their offense with him.
No question, that is a big loss. Look, we've seen tight ends do well against the Steelers over the past couple of years. Grisham's a guy who is a Pro Bowl type caliber tight end, really on the rise. And you're right, I think that's a big loss for Andy Dalton. Should make the job for the Steelers defense a little easier.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm not even sure who. I guess something like a Colin. I don't know if Colin Cockart is still with him or Dennis Rowland still with him, but they're going to be hurting at the tight end position. That, in fact, is going to hurt the running game as well, because I believe Brian Leonard, running back as well, is either doubtful or out on in this game as well. So this is huge for them, you know, because when you look at their wide receiving core, it's a fairly young bunch. You know, you've got A.J. Green, Andre Caldwell, you got the dope master himself, Jerome Simpson, you know, who's had some, you know, he's had some bright spots this year. But outside of A.J. Green, you know, they're thin at the wide receiver position. They're not a team that's going to out-physical you like the Anquan Boldin did in those, yep, and those two tight ends last week for Baltimore. So, you know, the Steelers won't have as big a problem, I don't think, playing some press man coverage in some cover two situations this week.
Yeah, and, you know, as you say, depth at receiver is definitely questionable. Brandon Tate, who was let go by the Patriots, is one of those guys who'll be third or fourth type receiver in that offense. I guess we're going to see them come with Grisham out. It'd be very interesting to see what type of formations they line up in. They're not really going to be have the opportunity probably to come with a lot of two tight end sets. So it will be interesting to see if they try to run the ball out of three wide receiver sets, or if they go with a you know, a straight pro style offense with a fullback and really just kind of try to go two wides and a fullback and just and pound it, because, you know, I do think that the nature of the game changes with Grisham out of there, as you pointed out, and I'd expect to see Ike Taylor probably following A.J. Green around. This is a chance for the Steelers. Again, we've talked about the success of rookie quarterbacks in the league over the past couple of years, and Andy Dalton certainly qualifies on that level, regardless of what you think of the competition. He's the first quarterback, I think, in the Super Bowl era to win six of his first eight starts. But this is a chance, taking away a couple of his weapons, to really kind of put some heat on him and see what he can do.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how they try to attack, because even though that they'd like that quarterback to throw so many times out of necessity, it seems, because they're in some close games this year, you know, with Cedric Benson and not having those tight ends, they'd probably be smart to give Bernard Scott a few more looks this week and try to get him the ball a little bit out in, you know, out in the open. Because, as I said, you know, outside of Whitworth and maybe, I don't know, one or two more on the line there are kind of marginals. This is not a team that's going to blow you off the ball. So to be smart, use Bernard Scott maybe to get him. You know, he's a little bit shiftier, a guy that can get out in space and make people miss as well. So the Grisham, this is a huge injury, along with the Donald Lee, the backup tight end, being out as well too. So it's going to be interesting to see what type of formation indeed that they line up with, because I don't think any of these wide receivers are there there are great run blockers. In fact, I know they're not by looking at the tape this past week. So, you know, you really got to like what the Steelers' chances, especially as far as an injury report goes. You hate to be without Lamar Woodley and Emmanuel Sanders and some of our guys, but they definitely have some key guys out as well, too.
Yeah, so, you know, that'll be something for us to pay attention to and for our listeners, you know, when you're thinking about this, to see the formations that the Bengals come out in, how they try to scheme things, and whether they're going to try, you know, they're obviously their ground game is more important to them than a lot of teams, and, you know, they may try to shorten the game because of that. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. As Joe Reedy, who was on with us Wednesday, thanks again to Joe. You can follow him on Twitter, at Joe Reedy. Talked about defensively, the Bengals really do actually have some up-and-coming, good, solid linebackers in Ray Malaluga, Thomas Howard, and Manny Lawson. High picks, a couple of them. These guys, you know, he compared them. You know, he didn't equate them with the Steeler linebackers, but he compared them that the level of play that the Bengals were getting from the linebackers versus the Steelers over the past 10 years has been just such a large gap. And now maybe these guys are bringing something to the table. They've got two corners in Leon Hall, a kid out of Michigan, and Nate Clements, who's bounced around a little bit, but been a Pro Bowl, I think a Pro Bowl caliber corner, who could do some things there. And then Reggie Nelson, the high pick out of Florida at free safety. It's more of a question, I think, their D-line, Carlos Dunlap, is you know, on their depth chart, I don't even know if they list him a starter, but I think he was listed in that top 50 players on ESPN.com. And they rotate a bunch of guys up front, as they have done in years past. How do you expect the Steelers to come at the Bengals? Do you think it would just go standard formation? You know, Heath out there, Mendenhall with two wides and a lot of three wide sets in obvious passing situations?
That's exactly right. I think you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel out there with the run, one running back, one tight end, maybe some 12 and 13. Let's face it, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to run on these guys. They're built to stop the run. They like to stack, you know, they run those stacked linebackers in there who are very good at getting into the gaps and all. So the best way to try to do this with a defense like this is, A, get them in certain personnel packages, you know, because they pretty much have a pass rush versus a run front, you know, with Dunlap and all like that. I should note that Dunlap's listed as questionable, and I need to correct myself. I said Gresham is doubtful. He's actually questionable this week, but with that hamstring, it's still not looking good for him. We'll have to see. But, yeah, I think what you want to do is you want to spread these guys out. You want to make the linebackers have to play the pass. So I think you're going to see the Steelers you know, they're going to run on first down occasionally, but I would not be surprised by the time you turned around at the end of this game if you saw more of a 50-50 split as far as run pass on first down. I think you need to attack them in, make the linebackers play. Play the pass. I think you need to attack the corners and make them play and make the safeties play as well, because I think, you know, that they have put up okay numbers thus far defensively against the pass, but when it's all said and done, I don't think they've played anybody, you know, like the Steelers as well when it comes to, you know, having to protect against the home run ball with Mike Wallace and the way Antonio Brown's been playing the last few games. Heath Miller's a huge asset, a tight end that probably quality that they probably haven't faced a lot in the middle of the field this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a good point. You know, look, the Steelers, you know, Ben has had a very good season. He's still, you know, still some unfortunate picks we've seen over the past couple of weeks. Certainly in the Patriots game, it cost him 7 points, and in the Ravens game, it cost him at least three when Suggs made that play when Ben made that, tried to make that little bubble screen out to the right.
He has had a couple of real stinker interceptions, hasn't he? It has, yeah, you know,
just really bad throws around a very good kind of otherwise very good performances. I mean, consistently solid performances. I didn't, you know, one of the things is, as good as Ben's been, and I think he deserves, you know, a lot of the praise that he's gotten, is I still don't think he's thrown the ball as well as he can throw it. I think I've seen him throw it better in the past. I think he's been better throwing the deep ball this year than we've ever seen. But he's been off target on balls over the middle and stuff. And Antonio Brown's made some circus catches. And Heath Miller made some good catches against New England. And we've seen, you know, Mike Wallace pull some in as well. You know, not a lot of drops from the Steelers receivers. Got to give him credit for that. Something that I think plagued them a little bit more last year. But I, you know, this offense just to me just seems to be a little bit away from really having a game where a breakout game, a game where they score 38 points, you know, five or six long drives, close. And you know, you can't. I don't know exactly when it's going to happen. And with Manny Sanders out, maybe it's a little less likely to happen this week. But I'm waiting for the game where Ben actually really puts it together. The running game gets going, and they put up big numbers. And hopefully, you know, it just seems like they're just missing it. They just missed it against a bad defense in New England, and I thought they did reasonably well against a good defense in Baltimore. So this game is a test for the Steelers, but it is really a watershed game for the Bengals because they haven't played, you know, good teams. You quoted the record of their opponents so far this year. It's like a 333 winning percentage. As big as, you know, it's a better win game for the Steelers, but it is going to be a measuring stick for Cincinnati in a big way. And, you know, if the Steelers really go out and pound them, that balloon is going to burst pretty quickly.
And, you know, I'm not ruling that out of the question this week, though, you know, David, because when you go back, I finished up the offensive line report from last week, and it was just absolutely incredible. I had to do it two times just to make sure I didn't miss anything. I mean, the way these guys play, Chris Kimoto, you'd swear that wasn't the same guy in his body. And this was the Ravens that we're talking about here that they did this against. And I think a lot of it has to do with continuity because, you know, let's face it, the first five, six, 7 weeks of the season, all the swapping going on. Now that for a couple weeks in a row, they've had the same offensive line pieces in there. Both Max Starks and Marcus Gilbert just fantastic out on the edge against Suggs and Johnson and all like that. And you know, this is a team when you have Ramon Foster and Marcus Gilbert blocking down on a defensive tackle inside. If some of these guys can get to the second level and make some blocks, and David Johnson can get through this hole as a lead fullback, I'm not saying that the Steelers can't rush for 80 or 90 yards in this game because, you know, like I said, just because the Bengals' rush ranks are good, their stats are good, they really haven't played anybody this year, and the Steelers have started to run the ball even to the left side on top of the, you know, run heavy right side that we've seen the last couple of weeks to the left pulling Ramon Foster that way. So maybe this is the game that they put everything together and not settle for three in the red zone and get seven. They've been able to move the ball on offense. They've had some key sacks and key penalties always at the wrong time there, but I'm not saying that this couldn't be the game that they put up 34.
Yeah. Well, let's get to, is there anything else you want to wrap up with? Were there anything in the, in terms of the personnel groupings that jumped out or on special teams, we saw Bryant McFadden make a tackle at the end of the game. That was kind of his only appearance really in the thick of the action. But anything else that jumped out at you?
No, just on defensively, I think, you know, it was a little bit of a shock to see Lawrence Timmons, a guy that when he plays, he's normally in there for every snap. We had him logged for 58 of the, I think it was 70... seven snaps the other night against Baltimore. You know, that was a little strange that you don't give him that many snaps. I don't know if it was just because maybe he had to work it, but, you know, hadn't got a lot of work back inside all these weeks with, you know, having to play outside with Harrison. But, you know, they also swapped out Timmons outside a few plays for Worlds. So that's, you know, that's something to watch, why you would have a guy that you just gave a big contract to not on the field for every play, especially when this is his first game back to the inside position there. That was the only thing that really stuck out. Cameron Hayward still struggling to see the field, mostly because damn, Brett Kiesel's just looking like he's playing 7 years younger right now. But outside of that, nothing really, really stuck out except for the fact maybe that they were in base a little bit more than I thought, and not so much dime and nickel this past week.
Right. And Sylvester, how many snaps was he on the field for?
I got him for 19 non-penalty snaps, which was quite a bit for him. I think he had saw like 10 the week before against the Patriots, and most of that was in the first and second quarter and first couple of drives for New England. And then that was all we saw of him because the Steelers were mostly in the dime or the big nickel dime package the rest of the game against him. So it seems like they're trying to work him in and give him some snaps, but now it looks like James Ferrier will be back this week from the quad injury. So we should see a heavy rotation of Timmons. And I'm willing to bet they don't play Ferrier all these snaps this week. Larry Foote certainly has deserved some more snaps. It would not surprise me even if Ferrier did not start this game, if you can believe that. So, that's something to watch for, the inside linebacker position next to Timmons this week and the snap counts as far as that goes.
And then Jason Worlds at the outside left.
Worlds with Woodley down. Worlds had, I think, 65 or 66 non-penalty snaps. Didn't play bad, did well against the run, I thought. And he has to work on the pass rush, but he had a couple of nice spins in there, a pressure or two. Just needs to get more consistent and more playing time will do that. Let's face it, since he was drafted, he hasn't seen the field a whole hell of a lot in meaningful situations. So, okay, we'll give him last week as him getting his feet wet, but this is the week he better bring it opposite Harrison, because if you get both those two able to provide pressure on that rookie quarterback there, have little ginger boy running for running for his life this week, it's hard for him to consistently beat you, even though he's good outside the pocket. He doesn't want to be running all day from them linebackers.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's get into Sunday's games. And we'll get right to it. The first game on the board is the Steelers, so we'll throw that to the end. The next one is a game, there's a little bit of interest, obviously, with Tim Tebow and the Broncos going into Kansas City. For Kansas City, it's a game where if they lose, I think you can probably write them off out of playoff contention. They're 4-4 right now. That division's a mess again, so you don't really want to count anybody out, particularly with the Raiders sticking it to the Chargers last night. But the Chiefs are a 3-point favorite at home. Tim Tebow now 1-1 in his two starts. Hasn't been particularly effective passing the ball. But, as they say, he's gotten them some wins, got him a win last week. How do you like this one?
This line started with the Chiefs favored by 7, I think is what it opened with. And you say it's moved to 3 now. So that last one, people were caught up in Tebow mania, evidently. I just think Kansas City just has enough to take care of. The Tebow story's nice and all like that. They're going to be playing in Kansas City, a very loud place. I'd take the Chiefs to lay the 3.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Kansas City's got a solid defense. I think they should be able to do the job here. I'll take the Chiefs and lay the 3 as well. This is it is interesting just because people are so polarized on Tebow to see how those things play out. The second one we got up here is Indianapolis at home hosting the Jaguars. These are two teams that are pretty much going nowhere. Jaguars favored by 3.
I don't know what to think. You don't know what the Jaguars are going to show up on offense, but on the flip side, the Colts are just flat out bad. I guess I'm staying away from this because I just can't get a good read on this game. So I think that the Colts are going to surprise some people this week against a stingy Jaguars defense. That 3 just looks kind of a trap to me. I'm going to take the Colts plus the 3 points.
Yeah, it's a who cares game for me. I flip a coin. I'll go with you. I don't have a strong view. Dallas is at home at a 1 o'clock game hosting the Bills, who came off a pretty lackluster showing at home last week against the Jets. The Cowboys are a 5.5-point favorite. As we say all the time, 5.5 is a number that means Vegas doesn't exactly know where to go. They want to see if the bettors push it one way or the other. They really haven't this week. I think this really opened around here. This is a game that I do have a strong opinion on. I think Dallas beats them and beats them handily. Kyle Williams out for Buffalo for the year. They're a good nose tackle. He played really well against the Steelers last year. I think Dallas puts it together this week.
Dallas is without Miles Austin, but that running back DeMarco really has filled in nicely for him and helped take the pressure off the passing game. I don't. What line are you showing on this?
5.5
because I can get 5 here. But at 5.5, okay, lay the 5.5, Dallas.
All right. In a game that, has some playoff implications here, this will be one of the more interesting ones to watch. The Texans go to Tampa. Tampa's been a little bit of a disappointment this year. I've always thought the Texans, last year I had the Texans and the Steelers as my preseason AFC Championship game. I don't think it's out of the question that it could be the Texans and the Steelers in the AFC Championship game this year. Andre Johnson doesn't look like he's going to be back still yet this week. This will be an interesting game. I saw a stat over the course of the week that over the last, say, 4 or 5 years, the Texans are like 26-10 against the NFC. They had the third most wins of any AFC team in interconference games behind the Steelers and the Patriots. So they've been good against the NFC. I don't have a strong view on this one, Dave. I guess as a rooter and a Steeler fan, I'll root for the Tampa Bay Bucks. But I don't have a strong view. You got a thought?
I tell you, Houston's dangerous, man. I mentioned several times over the last couple of weeks that this is a dangerous team right now, even without Andre Johnson. The way they're kind of getting the big play done, they've got the running game. They've still got the elements of the passing games and some great tight ends. If this team wins a division and gets some home field advantage in the playoffs, watch out is all I'm saying, because they're starting to play good defensive football with Wade Phillips over there. There's something wrong here. I would think the line on this would be a little bit larger than what it is. I don't know. I still would take the Texans to lay the points here.
All right. Yeah, gun to my head, I'm on the Texans as well. But, if the Steelers weren't playing at 1 o'clock, that would certainly be the game that gets my attention. Carolina's at home against the Titans, laying 3.5. I was surprised last week the Titans blew a 17-7 halftime lead at home against the Bengals. I don't think they're a bad team. Chris Johnson seems to be picking it up a little bit. Carolina is a good story. Cam Newton has clearly, put it in the face of all his detractors. He is having pretty much a unanimous rookie of the year type season, one of the best rookie quarterback seasons ever. The guy really is talented. They can run the ball. They're an okay team defensively. But I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to take the Titans plus the 3.5.
Wow, this is a tough one. You just don't know what Titans team's going to show up this week, and whether or not Chris Johnson is finally getting his motor grease there. Boy, this is tough, David. Cam Newton has really surprised me this year. You know what? They're at home. I'm going to lay that 3.5.
Miami against Washington, these are two teams going nowhere, but I think Miami has some talent. I'm not sure Washington does. The game's in Miami. They're a four-point favorite. Washington has put up 11 points the past 2 weeks. They got shut out and dominated by Buffalo, and then they put up 11 points with a late touchdown last week in a game at home where the fans were booing. Mike Shanahan's not getting it done. Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, clearly isn't getting it done. I'm going to take the Dolphins and lay the 4. I think they're just a better team.
I think they're back. They'll be back on the suck for luck train. I think they messed that up last week. Redskins are bad, but I just think they'll be able to get it done. I don't think the Dolphins will be able to do the same thing that they were able to get done last week there. So give me the Redskins plus the 4 points.
Okay, this is an interesting game. I know you've been a Falcons booster in terms of the talent you think they have. They're at home against the Saints, and this is a pick'em game. An interesting thing that I read, somebody wrote this week, is the Saints aren't nearly as talented as people around the league think they are. It's really Drew Brees makes a lot of mediocre players look good. Now, I think Darren Sproles has obviously been a great addition for that team. They've got some decent receivers. Their tight end is very solid. So I'm not sure I buy that they don't have some talent on the offensive side of the ball. Defensive side of the ball, maybe that's the case. But I think the Falcons are starting to put it together. They've got a great record in domes. I think they play 8 of their last 9 games in domes this year. They get the Saints at home. This game's pick 'em for me. I'll take the Falcons.
I actually can get the Falcons plus 1. You know how I have been. I just cannot get off this train with Matt Ryan at home. He just seems to get it done, and the Saints defense is susceptible against the pass. They've got Julio going now, it seems. Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez. I think they're clicking a little bit more on cylinders offensively. First one to 40 wins this game. They should, and that should happen by probably about by about the end of the third quarter. Give me the Falcons plus the point.
Yep, okay. Two other 1 o'clock games. The Browns are hosting the Rams. The Rams are getting 3. I think Sam Bradford's due back in this game. I'm not 100% sure about that. If Sam Bradford's playing, I'll take the Rams plus 3. No question the Browns have been a disappointment. I think some people thought that maybe this was a team that could win 6, 7, 8 games this year. It doesn't look like that's going to happen, and I think the Rams are going to keep them on that track.
Did you see that viral video floating around of the Browns fan outside of the Cleveland Stadium this past week?
I did not.
I've got to send you that. He's yelling in the middle of the night at the stadium saying, did you see the Packers in San Diego game? He says, they make us look like we're playing in a whole different league or a whole different type of game or whatnot. It was just funny. I'm going to have to make sure I get it to you. But I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about this game. Browns are at home, so let them lay the three.
All right, I've got the Eagles and the Cardinals off the board. It just came up in the last couple minutes that Kevin Cobb is not playing. I think that line could be, I haven't seen it all week. So I'm going to guess the Eagles are probably a touchdown favorite on the road. Oh, no, they're at home. So they're probably now a 9-point favorite, something like that.
It opened 2 touchdowns.
Okay. So, yeah, maybe without Cobb, maybe it's a 14-point game. 14 is a lot. Don't like giving that many. But, you know, damn this Eagles team. They got to win games. They got to play better football. I don't know if it's just they're not as good as everybody thought they were going to be, or they just aren't putting it together. I'll take a minus 13 at 14. I'll probably just pass.
Yeah, 14's a tough number there, and being that we don't have a real live number on this, I'm going to kind of go with what you say. If I can lay 13, I'm fine. 14, I don't want nothing to do with it.
Interesting game at 4:00. The Bears and the Lions. Chicago's at home for this, and they're a 3-point favorite. If you're a Chicago Bears fan, you have to love what you saw last weekend or Monday night, whenever it was, against the Eagles when they took them apart 30-24. Big stuff, a big win for them. Detroit's obviously been a fun team to watch. Stafford, Calvin Johnson, got some issues at running back, but I think Javid Best is still banged up. But this is a good young team. But with the way the Bears played last week on the road, I got to take them -3 at home.
Yeah, this is a tough game. Detroit needs to answer the critics here after getting off to a hot start and then losing a couple of games here. I'm with you. I mean, the Bears really look like a different team right now. They've got Bennett back, who's a favorite target of Cutler's. They seem to be doing all the little things right now. So at home, I'm with you. I'm buying what I saw the other night. So let me lay the points with the Bears.
Ravens are at Seattle. Ravens are laying 6.5. That's not enough for me. Seattle playing a little bit better. They'll be at home, but I don't think they're particularly good. If the Ravens played like they did against the Steelers, they should win that by a touchdown or more.
Is there any sort of letdown that can happen here in this game?
Certainly keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, going all the way out to Seattle. It's so loud out there. Seattle's not good, but they're not bad. You know, they're not a team that I would say, oh, my God, there's no chance in this game. I think the Seahawks can keep this game close. I don't think they can win it, though. I can get 7 in this game, so let me have Seahawks +7.
Interesting. Okay. Another good game at 4:15 is San Francisco hosts the Giants. Ahmed Bradshaw is going to be out on this game. San Francisco, obviously, everything's gone right. They've got a not particularly talented quarterback who they're playing to his strengths. 7-1, one of two teams with one loss or less. They're the biggest surprise in the league, no question. 3.5-point favorite. Giants are playing better. I'm taking the Giants on the road, going to the West Coast, and keeping this game close and probably winning it outright.
Boy, if you keep not giving Harbaugh respect like this, he's going to start acting like the other Harbaugh. Not that he's not already, but I'm with you. I there's something about San Francisco that I'm still not buying just yet. Giants are playing some good inspired ball right now, even though they got to travel all the way out west. I think they can win this outright. So give me the Giants plus the points.
And, the other thing about that, the Giants have those good linebackers. That is one thing. They really got some solid players there. So it'll be interesting to see how they attack that game without Ahmed Bradshaw. But Eli Manning's been good. We'll see if he can get it done another week. The 8:30 game on 8:30 game on Sunday is a good one. I think it started off around pick or maybe the Pats by one. I now have the Jets by 1.5 over the Patriots. You have pointed out that maybe this Patriot ship has sailed. They lack a lot of team speed. They certainly aren't particularly good on defense. The Steelers took them apart. The Giants beat them last weekend. They haven't lost three games in a row in a long, long time. I think it happens this week. I think the Jets will beat them and beat them by more than a point and a half. I'll lay it.
I'll lay it too. And just what I said, what I broke down before the Steelers game, I was not concerned about this game because New England, their play on defense, they've gone ahead and let Albert Haynesworth walk now. This team is a mess right now. They're going to have to outscore you. And Rex Ryan has seen 2 weeks in a row the Steelers, he's got tape on that game. He's got tape on the Giants game as well, too. That's a lot of stuff to look at. Like he said, he's not afraid to steal from anybody for something that works. I think the Jets beat him, and I think they beat him good in this game, too. So I'll lay the points.
Yeah, Green Bay's at home on Monday night against the Vikings.
What a stinker this is, huh?
Yeah, you know, Green Bay looks like they can put up 40 anytime they want. Minnesota's going to have Christian Ponder in there. Green Bay's defense, I'll tell you the thing that should keep people, interested is Green Bay's defense has proven to be a bit vulnerable, particularly their pass defense. I don't think the Vikings will do enough, and I'll lay the 13, but this is a team that's, they're not a runaway dominant team. They certainly are offensively, but their defense is not maybe quite up to the standards it was last year. So they're going to have to outscore people. But I think they'll do it on Monday night.
Yeah, they give up a lot of explosive plays. I've liked what I've seen from this Ponder kid. Let me tell you, it's too bad that he wasn't a couple of years earlier for them through and all, all this, even though they, the Brett Favre years and all like that, they came close there. But I like what Ponder shows, and I think you hit it on the head that this is a team that's susceptible to the big play on defense and the pass. Not overly great. I think Adrian Peterson will be able to find some running lanes in this game. Hey, the Packers are going to win this game, but give me Cincinnati. I can get 13.5 on this. I mean, Cincinnati. Give me Minnesota plus the 13.5 on this.
And then with the Steeler game, 1 o'clock Monday, Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, 1 o'clock Sunday. Steelers are in different places. You see 3 or 3.5, depending on what kind of vig you're paying. I want to say the Steelers put this all together offensively. I think defensively, we've talked about Gresham being out as being a big thing. I think we see Andy Dalton is a good young quarterback, but he's not there yet. I haven't had a chance to make my Friday calls a couple times because I missed some of the Friday podcasts. I managed to get the New England one dead on spot just about, and I had the Steelers winning the Baltimore game, so that was disappointing. But, I haven't called too many blowouts this year, but I'm going to call a blowout here this weekend and say the Steelers win this 27-10.
Wow. I think they cover. Somehow I think we find a way to end up making this game a little bit closer than we need to, perhaps, a late touchdown in this. I'm going to go 24-17 on this one.
Let me just throw in for you, for those of you who get the Post-Gazette or have a chance online, Ed Bouchette wrote a nice piece today on the Steeler defense and talking about how I think the headline was the Steeler defense seems to go to bed a little too early late in games. And Ed went back and looked back all the way back to the Super Bowl against Arizona and kind of catalogs the games. And I think there might have been 8 last year where teams had late drives against the Steelers, went down and scored, that impacted the outcome of the game or, put the Steelers in a position where they had to come back to score to win. We've now seen it a couple times this year. This is, if you're going to define a kind of chronic problem with the Steelers, this is the big problem. And we saw it again last week. We saw New England stay in the game and score late and have a chance then get, they at least got a chance getting the ball back. The Steelers haven't put teams away. This is something they got to do. They didn't even do it against the Titans until really late in the game. So let's hope this is the week they put that together and they can put a game away a little bit earlier and then put the running game in there and see if they can, grind out the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's definitely what we're hoping for because let's face it, getting things on all cylinders this week, going into the bye week, get some bodies healthy and all, they need that because let's face it, we really need to run the table the rest of the way if we really want a shot at winning this division and all.
Good stuff. All right, Dave. That's going to wrap up episode 42 of season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.